Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done, brother.
It's 6 after 10. Good morning. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network. Well, to say that we live in tough financial times would be something of an understatement. It's not quite 1929, but for some people, it's pretty bad. And I don't think they're all whiners. And some economists are saying you ain't seen nothing yet. So, how can a person survive in an uncertain economy? Are there strategies that we can use to protect and grow our net worth? Well, that's where my next guest comes in. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and the owner of McKinley Money. He is also a registered investment advisor located in Eau Claire, and he provides management and financial planning to individuals and family. And I should also mention that he is a former Wisconsin Public Radio talk show host, and he's been a frequent guest on the Ideas Network when we want to talk about family financial issues. Good morning, Kevin, and welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're not quite to Brother Can You Spare a Dime, but things are pretty tough for a lot of people, and even for those who have jobs and are still, getting by, there are some problems on the horizon if we aren't very, very careful. As you're counseling people and talking to people, what do you take as the general mood that people have toward their financial future?
Well, there's two sides of the coin, and one is that as an American population, we have more freedom with our money than we had, say, 30 or 40 years ago. We have our own self-directed 401ks instead of pension accounts generally. We have health insurance that we're more free to go buy on our own, and in some cases that freedom is really good. In other cases, it becomes a freedom to fail, and that is kind of the mood of even people who by the numbers, are in pretty good shape. There's still a malaise and a general fear out there for not only their own personal financial situation, but also the general economic picture.
So that light at the end of the tunnel might or might not be a train, depending
right.
on how you handle it.
Exactly, okay. and it's because we're getting hit with a quadruple whammy in terms of, not only obviously gas prices, inflation, but people are paying more out of pocket for their own health care than they were, say, 10 or 15 years ago, and they are not seeing the wage gains generally that we've seen in other inflationary times. And that's not 100% bad for the economy, but it is 100% bad for the individual who's not seeing the rise in income that they're seeing along with prices.
I'm going to go ahead and give the phone numbers right now because I know a lot of people, Kevin, are going to want to call in and ask for your advice, and so I want to make that available to them while we continue our conversation here. 800-486-8655. It's a toll-free number, 800-486-8655. If you're calling from Milwaukee, the number is 414-227-2050, 227-2050. And, of course, our email address, as always, is talk@wpr.org. We're talking with Kevin McKinley about some things you can do to protect your own personal net worth. And so we'll continue that, and I'm sure that we'll be getting some questions about some of the things that we'll be talking about here very shortly. So, Kevin, if you had to put together a top 10 list of things people should do to protect themselves during this economic downturn, what would recommendation number one be?
Well, most of the time, especially people who have some cash on hand but also have some debt, there's a very natural inclination, John, to try to get rid of that debt as quickly as possible because they see the interest rate either eroding into their net worth, or they see the interest rate rising. My advice to those people generally is that you should not pay off your debt any faster than you actually have to. And the reason being is that it's very important to keep liquidity in tougher times because let's say you've got $10,000 in your checking account and you've got $10,000 outstanding on a credit card. Well, it would feel good to pay that off, move the $10,000 over to the credit card, and reduce the probably high interest rate. But if you should lose your job or you have some type of a financial emergency, it's very tough to get that $10,000 back from the credit card company without taking a big cash advance. And if the credit card company closes the account out after you've paid it off, it's impossible to get that $10,000 back. So if you are concerned about your financial future in the near term, keep as much cash on hand as you possibly can, because that allows you to kind of ride out the tougher times, making the minimum payments required to keep up to date on your bills, but also having the money there for an emergency, too.
What if you don't have $10,000 in your checking account? What if it's $500?
Well, then that would definitely apply even more so. I would not take on any new debt in that situation, and I would try to look and run maybe a financial fire drill where you say, okay, let's just say I showed up at work today and work was not there for whatever reason. What would I do? How would I come up with money? Would I have to sell my car and start taking the bus and taxis or buy a bike, something like that? What would I do for health insurance? And running that fire drill can be a little scary, but after it's done, then people generally get a better sense of ease. So they say, hey, even if I go to work tomorrow and it's not there for whatever reason, I've already prepared for that. I already know generally what I would do in that situation rather than going into a big panic.
Well, I know that that safety experts talk about, you know, when you're driving your car in the winter, you should have some sort of a safety kit in the trunk at all times, and so you've got a plan and you're prepared if you have some problem along the roadway. You've got a blanket and some flares and a shovel and so forth, and some kitty litter for the tires or whatever.
Don't forget the Snickers bars.
Yeah, the Snickers bars. It seems to me like, you know, you're talking about, well, okay, have a plan for the worst that can happen, and then you can sleep at night.
That's exactly right. And take a few steps so that when that comes, I mean, you can't prevent those bad things from happening generally, but you can prevent how badly they affect your financial future, both in the long term and the short term. And if you plan for them to happen, it will just come as a pleasant surprise if they don't.
Well, that's I've been called Mr. Worst Case Scenario for that very reason. Because, you know, I always expect the worst, and then when it doesn't happen, I'm pretty happy about that too. So, I mean, either way, you're satisfied. Give us something else. Another recommendation. So, the first one you would say is don't pay off your debt any faster than you have to. Maintain your liquidity. What would be something else that you would include in your top 10 list?
Well, for people who have you know, they feel like, hey, I'm okay here. I've got some living expenses, say 3 to 6 months set aside, so that if I were to lose my job, it would not be good, but it wouldn't be the end of the world for me. I would recommend that people actually raise their contribution to their at-work retirement plan. Generally, people who are contributing right now usually contribute about 5 to 6% of their gross salary into the plan. There are several benefits to doing that right now. And when I say at-work retirement plan, we're usually talking about 401Ks or 403Bs or even TSAs for government or educational workers. First of all, you generally can get a match from your private employer. About 30 to 40% of employees have a match available to them, but only about 60 or 70% even get that match because they're not contributing enough. So first of all, you may be able to get a match. The second thing is, it will lower the taxes that you pay on April 15th of 2009. So if you put $1,000 into your 401k, you're just moving money from one jar of yours, in this case your paycheck, into your 401k. But if you are in, let's say, the 30% overall tax bracket for state and federal, which most working people are, you're going to cut your taxes next year by $300, the tax bill that you owe on April 15th. So that $1,000 deposit into your 401k or 403b will cut your taxes. It will probably lower your taxes in retirement. It will for sure lower your taxes until you retire because you won't pay any taxes on the gains you have. And finally, it contributes to my secret investment strategy, which only both the regular listeners of On Your Money knew about because we talked about a lot on the show, but that is to buy low and sell high. And right now, asset prices for stocks and other types of liquid assets are generally low. People who put money in now are buying low. Now, it may still go lower yet, but we're probably a lot closer to the low than we are to the high of a year ago.
Buy low and sell high. See, I've always had the opposite thing happen to me. I buy at the top of the market, and then when I decide to get out, it's I'm dumping everything. So
would you do me a favor, John? Would you just send me all of your money moves? Because it makes it so much easier to time things if I just do the opposite of whatever it is you're doing.
Although I did predict the real estate collapse about 5 years before it actually happened, and I sold my house, and I thought that was a great deal. But then a couple of years later, I thought, geez, I really would like to own a house again. So I bought, and it was probably the worst time to do it. Anyway,
well, that's part of our theory, too, on the On Your Money show was never wrong, often early.
Well, I'm often wrong, but never uncertain.
Okay, good. Well, then you could have been on the show, too.
Well, I've been on a lot of shows. Let's take another suggestion here from you. What's another thing on your top 10 list?
Well, again, for people who do have that that kind of rainy day account set aside, where they've got a few thousand dollars that they can't really spend on something and they shouldn't pay the debt off, I would suggest moving that rainy day account into a Roth IRA. Now, the Roth IRA has income limits. For single people, you have to make less than generally of about $100,000, and for married couples filing jointly, it's typically about $160,000. So obviously, most people qualify for a Roth IRA. You have to have earned income generally, or your spouse has to have earned income. The deposit limits are $5,000 for people under 50 for 2008 and $6,000 for people over 50. Now, the Roth IRA, John, doesn't reduce income taxes right when you put it in. So it's not like the 401k or 403b or even the regular IRA. However, it will reduce taxes down the road as the earnings are sheltered from taxes. And then in retirement, of course, distributions from a Roth IRA are tax-free. And there's another little touch to the Roth IRA that a lot of people don't know about. Distributions from a Roth IRA are not counted for taxation purposes of Social Security. So if you took maybe $30,000 out of an IRA or TSA or something like that in retirement, you may have to pay taxes if you're collecting Social Security at the same time. But right now, Roth IRA distributions will not make that Social Security taxable. So you can take $1 million out of a Roth IRA, and you still will not have to pay taxes on the Social Security. Now, the reason that I think that the rainy day is such a rainy day fund is such a good idea for the Roth IRA, and this is something else that a lot of people aren't aware of, you can always withdraw the contribution portion of your Roth IRA at any time for any reason with no taxes or penalties whatsoever. And here's how that works. So let's say over the next 10 years, someone contributes $5,000 to her Roth IRA each year. So she's put in a total of $50,000. And let's say she does the opposite of your investment strategy, John. She actually makes a little money on it so that the value of the account after 10 years is $80,000. Well, no matter what her age is and no matter what reason she's doing this, she can pull $50,000 of that Roth IRA back out now, and the IRS will allow her to designate that withdrawal as the contributions of her Roth IRA, and therefore there will be no taxes or penalties. So if people use that as kind of their rainy day vehicle, they can put the $5,000, let's say, in there. If they need the money in a year, they can pull $5,000 back out. But if they don't need it, it becomes a very nice tax-free saving strategy. Now, for people who are considering this, if it is their rainy day fund, they should still generally invest in relatively conservative investment accounts, not something that goes out 20 or 30 years.
800-486-8655 is the toll-free number to call to join our program today and ask for some advice from Kevin McKinley. 227-2050 if you're calling us from Milwaukee. You can also join us via the internet, talk at WPR.org. We're talking about financial planning in tough times, how to preserve your own personal net worth. We've got an expert for you to talk to, and you can take advantage of that by calling us at 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
What I couldn't do with plenty of money and you, in spite of the worry that money.
What we all couldn't do with plenty of money, right? We're talking about money today here on the Ideas Network, specifically how to protect your net worth in tough times with Kevin McKinley, a former host of Kevin McKinley on Your Money here on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. And here's what's coming up a little bit later on the Ideas Network. We always like to give you a preview of stuff coming down the pike. This afternoon, with rising food costs and a salmonella outbreak, Americans are turning to their own yards for produce after 2 on Science Friday. Whether you're a new green thumb or a gardening guru, you can join the discussion to share tips on troubleshooting your summer garden, plus a look at which coral reefs are at risk for extinction and what can be done about it. That's coming up later today here on the Ideas Network. Well, as I said, this hour we're talking about money, specifically yours, and what you can do to preserve your own net worth. And we are going to take some phone calls because the phone banks are full. Let's start from with Adam from Medford, who is our first caller today. Adam, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to ask your guest about comments made recently by George Soros. But before I do so, I'd just like to inform the listeners who George Soros is. He's an international hedge fund billionaire, a man who has made $1 billion in a single day by destabilizing the British pound. He got his start laundering counterfeit currency for Adolf Hitler, and he's the biggest single contributor to the U.S. Democrat Party. He's a man who's very well plugged into the financial situation. On public radio last night, he said that the financial system in the United States is based on a bubble. He says that bubble is going to burst real soon. He says the United States is going to be plunged into a 1930s-style depression. That's exactly what Mr. Soros says. I want to know if this is fear-mongering or if there's some other explanation for current economic problems.
That's a good question, and I am a follower of Mr. Soros, and I have for quite a while. He has been amazingly successful in some of the times that you, the instances that you talked about. He's also predicted 3 of the last 1 financial collapses. And he does this periodically. I'm not quite sure of the reasons why he's done this in the past, other than maybe his personal belief. Maybe he's got something to gain by it. I have no idea. There are definitely serious problems ahead. There have been serious problems in the past that have not resulted in worldwide financial panic that he's talked about. I respect most of what he says, and he very well may be right this time, but I'm not exactly, I wouldn't take every single word he says as the gospel truth, just like I wouldn't take any single person's word as the be-all, end-all of it, other than mine, of course.
Well, he's not the only one who's saying that things are going to get a lot worse. I receive a regular business newsletter called Investor's Insight, and I don't know if you're familiar with that one, but just the other day they had a note that came along that said, well, you think this is bad, get ready because things are going to get a whole lot worse. They were talking about ways to profit in a falling market, which somebody somewhere is always making money on something. But we're focused more on what our own personal situations are day to day, not necessarily, and regardless of what happens in the economy, we still have to find a way to live. And you're talking about some practical things that people can do to help themselves retain their net worth. Let's take another call. This time, let's go to Mark in Cedarburg. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Say, all this stuff is fine and good, but what happens as the dollar continues to fall and everything we have is still invested in dollars? Why, I would like to hear some strategies for moving money out of dollars and into stable currencies.
That's a great question, because much of the economic malaise and fear comes from the fact that the dollar has fallen as much as it has. It's part of the reason gas prices are high. It's part of the reason apple prices are high, both for the fruit and the computer.
And the question is, what do you do to take advantage of that or protect against that? And investing abroad in non-dollar denominated securities is one way to do that, in foreign funds. But to do that now, you may be actually be buying high. The dollar and the rest of the world economy has an equilibrium in place, where and at the top of the hour we heard a news break that said that that productivity and economic activity in the United States has risen because the dollar has fallen, and because investors overseas are finding good deals here, they're finding products that are made in the United States that are much cheaper, whether they're buildings or football teams or what have you, because of the falling dollar. And eventually them moving the money over to it starts to drive the U.S. economy up, which in theory drives the U.S. dollar back up as well. So again, with the dollar, I would say, in my completely uneducated and probably wrong guess, is that we're closer to the low in the valuation of the dollar than we are to the high in that. So doing something now to try to prevent it might be closing the barn door after the cows have escaped.
Let's take a call next from Chris in Burlington.
Hi, how you doing? It's good to hear Kevin back on the radio, and he sounded a little glum in the beginning there. I think it might have been, John, your reference to former radio host. I think he's radio host on hiatus. I think that's actually what
I'm trying to set the record, Chris, for the longest hiatus in world history.
Oh, well, we miss you, and we hope you get a partner that is as funny as your last one to bring you back.
Thank you.
My question is about home equity lines of credit, and I remember on the show you were kind of promoting those for people, if I remember correctly, as a way of having some reserves that you could tap into in an emergency. My question is, since that's it's an asset tied to your home, obviously, wouldn't it be better to use credit card in the event that they're unsecured? And they wouldn't be able to go after your home if you had a problem?
That's right. And I could tell you actually were one of the people who were actually listening to the show, so I appreciate that. You're right. Generally, people, I think everyone who has home equity should try to open a home equity line of credit as long as they will not abuse it, as they will just keep it open as one more safety net from which they can draw in a good emergency or a bad emergency. But a strange thing happened in the last year is a lot of financial institutions looked at the home equity lines of credit that they had set up for homeowners and figured out that, in theory, the values of some of the homes had dropped so much that there wasn't as much equity, but the people could borrow from that. So there have been some cases of the lending institutions freezing the home equity lines of credit or even closing them out so that people could not tap it. That's mostly anecdotal.
Well, it would be pretty important, Kevin, for all homeowners to have an accurate number to use to know what their home is worth. And
right.
How is there a way to do that without paying someone $300 or $400?
Well, I would. Sometimes the banks are willing to open that line of credit without getting an appraiser to it. I would say if you do not have a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. And this, again, is just something that allows you basically to write checks against the supposed equity in your home. If you do not have one of those, not only do I think you should get one if you can use it responsibly, but I think the $300 or $400 that you may or may not have to pay an appraiser to get the valuation of home is money well spent to have that extra safety net, because that's where a lot of Americans have a majority of their liquid net worth or illiquid net worth, as the case may be, tied up in. And I think that they should definitely have it. Now, and you're going back to your question, it's very difficult to tell what a home is worth, but I can guarantee that it's probably slightly less than whatever the homeowner and the real estate agent say it's worth.
Let's go next to Jim from Kenosha.
Yeah, first, to curse that fellow with Soros, we don't necessarily have to believe his political statements about Soros either. My question is, I've been moving some money into target retirement funds, and over the last 3 months trying to kind of dollar cost average, because I didn't know where the bottom was, and I I wonder if that's a good thing to continue to do. I've got still have some left to move, or just say this is close to the bottom and do it. And then also what Kevin thinks of target retirement funds and how he would compare those against managed payout funds.
Thanks, Jim. The target retirement funds, for those who don't know, those are mutual funds that are broadly invested in several different categories. There might be some U.S. stocks, some international stocks, some bonds, some cash, but they're focused on a certain date in the future, like let's say 2020. So if someone says, I'm 45 years old, I want to retire when I'm 58, I'll get a 2020 target date fund. And not only does the allocation reflect that goal, but it in many cases will start shifting to be more conservative as that person nears retirement. That's not a bad idea. It's not always the right idea, and sometimes people should actually be aggressive investors even when they are on the cusp of retirement. But if you say my only strategy is either nothing or a target date fund, I think that's fantastic because it takes some of your trying to decide when to buy and sell out of the equation. And then in terms of the managed payout funds, those are funds that basically say we're going to give you a payout amount somewhat like an annuity or like Social Security, but it's more flexible. The investor gets to have more say in how much is sent out. Those are a great idea on paper and so far, but they're relatively new, and I'd like to see some more a track record in good times and bad times on those before I would put my blessing on those.
Let's talk a little bit more about something you mentioned earlier about putting your rainy day savings into a Roth IRA. What do you think about saving for college using a Roth IRA?
I think it's a great idea for people in a certain situation, and that certain situation is, first of all, that they qualify for a Roth IRA, and the second thing is being that they're not quite sure if they're going to have enough money for retirement, because with the Roth IRA's benefits we talked a little bit about before, about being able to withdraw the contributions at any time. That, of course, includes college. Now, kids can borrow money to go to college. I hope they don't have to, but that is an option. We cannot borrow money to retire, and so retirement should almost always be a priority ahead of saving for college. People can save money for the Roth IRA in the Roth IRA for their retirement, and then when that child reaches college age, if by that time the parents have enough money for retirement, they can pull those contributions they've made to that Roth IRA back out, and then put that money towards college. But if they say, you know what, sorry, Junior, things are a little tight for us, you're going to have to come up with the money on your own, then they can still use that Roth IRA money for a tax-free retirement.
Well, one thing I've done that may actually turn out to have been a good idea, after my kids moved out and they weren't on my car insurance anymore, I raised all my deductibles on homeowners, everything, to as much as I thought I could stand. Is that something, I mean, that obviously if I have an accident, then I'm out that money, but is that something you'd recommend?
Depends on how many accidents you have, John. Have you had any recently?
Knock on wood, none.
Okay, good. I generally think people should raise their deductibles not only on their auto insurance, but their homeowner's insurance and even their health insurance if they can afford it, and to keep the amount of the money that constitutes their deductible aside in an account, and it can be in a lot of different places like a Roth IRA. But raising the deductibles accomplishes several things. First of all, it lowers the premiums. For car insurance, if you have, let's say a $500 deductible and double that deductible up to $1,000, the drop in premiums will usually be enough that if you go 3 years without making a claim, you'll come out ahead. Now, a lot of people uncertain about the future say, oh, gosh, I don't want to do that. Well, you only have to go back to the middle of 2005 if you haven't had a claim since then. That's 3 years, and it's unlikely that Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, I bet, are probably a little safer driver than average. It's unlikely they're going to make a claim. When the homeowner's insurance, it's the same thing, but the homeowner's is a little more sticky because not only do you lower your premiums, but it makes it less likely that you're going to make a claim with your homeowner's provider. And a lot of people have found out that most homeowner's insurance companies are very happy to pay off for one covered claim. And then the second one, within a couple years, they kind of say, no, okay, here's your check. And the third one, some people get dropped. And once you get dropped from your homeowner's
coverage, it's very difficult to get back on with some other company with the same type of terms. So, yes, if you're good at saving money and you've got enough aside to pay the deductible, definitely raise those deductibles up.
Well, and another reason to maintain a good credit score, Kevin, is that your homeowner's insurance will be based on it.
Your homeowner's insurance, well, yeah, we can talk about that, but your homeowner's insurance, your auto insurance, your dateability. I've seen anecdotal evidence that potential partners are asking for credit scores. Blood tests have gone out the window. FICO scores are in now where they just want to say, I want to know what I'm getting into before I fall in love with this person.
Wow. I'm glad I got married when I did that. Let's go next to Tony in Madison. Tony, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is associated with some funds that have come in associated with stock that has been sold, and it's an ESOP, Employee Stock Ownership Fund.
Okay.
And so it's not taxable as long as I roll it over into an IRA, which I am, okay?
Right.
But it's what type of fund should I put it in? Because this money, although I'm near retirement, I won't touch it for another 5 years at least. And I'm wondering how best to put it into the market right now. Should I leave it in just like a money market? Should I put it in the bonds? Or should I put it in the stock?
That's hard to say without, you know, performing a financial physical on your situation. And, but generally, in a person in your situation, it depends on how much growth you need and how much volatility you can stand. If you can stand a 30% drop in the value of that account, Tony, yeah, the stock market should be fine over 15 or 20 years. If you say, no, that would drive me nuts, especially on the cusp of retirement, you should scale back that allocation to, you know, something along the lines of 50-50 between stock and bonds. But I like your perspective about it because even a lot of times people who are retiring at age 60, they might live another 20 or 25 years. So they really have a 55-year-old in that situation has a 20 or 30-year investment horizon and doesn't have to necessarily take all that money and put it under the mattress.
Thanks for that call, Tony. Let's go next to Jeff in Richfield.
Hello.
Jeff, Hello. Good morning. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, my question is this. My wife and I both combined income of a little over $300,000. And we've
That's
put
why
our
you live in Richfield,
into,
right?
The company retirements, and both of them being rather small companies, we are affected by the IRS rule of highly compensated individuals, and we get some money back. Wanting to know, is there something we can do to put some more money into retirement without taxes?
Sure. And you're not self-employed, right?
Correct.
Okay. First of all, it's a good problem to have, and as I mentioned, it explains why you live in Richfield. You live in the right place. But that said, there are not a whole lot of ways for people in your situation to defer income on it. Now, sometimes people will promote strategies using life insurance and things like that.
We have some of that as well. But.
Yeah, life insurance is great to insure lives, and as a savings vehicle for an investment vehicle for most people, it doesn't make sense. But in your case, I would say rather than trying to, you know, defer any income than what you have, I'd try to reduce the income and using things investment vehicles that are more tax efficient, such as mutual funds that don't distribute a lot of their gains and income, so that doesn't add to that. The other thing about it is I probably look more towards exchange-traded funds, which are kind of like a mutual fund that generally they distribute even less of their gains and distributions. But in terms of putting more in than what you can to your retirement account, unless you have a very specialized kind of esoteric option with your employer, and that's one place I would start, it's very difficult to find a plain vanilla solution to that other than just maxing out all your retirement accounts.
Now, one other quick question, and then you can answer. I'm 49 years old, and I'll be 50 next year. With the amount of, I can put additional $5,000, I guess, into a retirement account that, I don't know, is that then affected also by the IRS rules and the highly compensated individuals, or is that not touchable?
There's two different rules that are two different jars that you're kind of talking about. And the highly compensated employee
has an issue, obviously, in terms of how much you can contribute at work, and then the over 50 bonus that you get for the extra $5,000 to be able to contribute to a 401k or 403b, that's a separate issue for it. Without looking at the exact plan, I couldn't tell you for sure how much it fits in, because you'd have to talk with the employer or the provider to see what that final number would be. But when it comes down to it, generally, the number is the number, and whether you qualify for other benefits, based on a certain age, that typically is difficult to get around.
Jeff, thanks for that call. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have more questions for Kevin McKinley, who's joining us to help you kind of navigate these rough economic waters that we're having and preserve your net worth. There is an open phone line available for you right now at 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. We'll get to as many calls as we can this hour. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Oh, Lord, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either. So what would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I were a rich man, I have a dividend. All day long I dividend. If I were a wealthy man, I...
Well, even if you aren't a wealthy man or a wealthy woman, you can join our program here this morning and get some financial advice from Kevin McKinley. Here's what's coming up next hour with Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. One of Larry's favorite guests is on Garden Talk after 11, UW-Madison Horticulture Department Senior Lecturer Bob Tomesch. He offers advice on your gardening questions. That's coming up next hour here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking your personal finances with Kevin McKinley. And you can join our conversation. Right now, you can join it by sending us an email. talk@wpr.org is the address. We have full phone banks, and let's take a call here from Will in Fox Point. Will, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going?
We're doing all right, Will. Nice to hear from you.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I got not a lot of money. I got like $5,000 in a Roth IRA account.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if there would be any benefit or if it would probably be best to invest my money in oil for a little while and how I would do that.
There's lots of different ways to do it if you do decide to do it. There's mutual funds that specialize in just companies involved in oil, whether that's in exploration or distribution or in oil service companies that make helicopters that ferry workers back and forth to the rigs. The question is first of all, do you want to have your entire Roth IRA tied up in one industry? And the second question, Will, is do you want to have all that money tied up into something that is based on a commodity, a price of which is high? And if you've got lots of other investments out there and you say, hey, I'd like, I have $100,000 overall and I'd like to have 5% of that in oil, sure, that's not a bad idea. But to say that I want to have 100% of my retirement assets invested in anything, whether it's oil or nanotechnology or what have you, I don't think that's prudent. You can put a portion of that money into oil, but I'd reconsider the idea completely. And even if you decide to go ahead with it, without knowing any more about your finances, I'd still say I'd just like you to just put a small portion of the money in that.
Well, I'm only 25. This is why I'm actually considering. I'm only 25, and it's not something, I understand, obviously, oil is going to go back down sometime. Hopefully, we'll find a new resource to power our cars. But, for the time being, it looks like for the next 6 months, at least, if I put all my money in oil, it's only $5,000.
Right.
Not like, and I'm only 25. I don't know if it's necessarily a huge retirement issue at this point, and I just was thinking maybe, for 6 months or the next year, you don't see it going down at all. I don't think anybody sees it going down at all. That's why I was kind of wondering about it.
And that's actually part of the problem, Will, is that just if you're buying on information that everyone has, that information is usually pretty well priced into the market. The only time people make m- money, especially over the short term, is if there's a surprise that goes against what the conventional wisdom that's already factored into the market. And so it's one of those things where, you know, Peter Lynch, God bless him, when he had the Fidelity Magellan Fund, he did well, but he got this idea out there that you just had to, you know, if you're standing in line at Dunkin' Donuts and everybody in the long line and the prices are high, you should buy Dunkin' Donuts stock. And that worked for him for a few years. But
it makes a lot of sense. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great question. Thanks for the call, Will. Let's go next to Steve in Madison. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I have a Social Security question. I'm 65, and my wife is 67. We both have June birthdays, and we're both retired. And I'm wondering, you know, do we wait till we're 70? Do we take one now and not the other? Our benefit will be pretty equal. We both have worked.
That's a real easy question to answer, Steve. Just give me the date that you and your wife plan on dying.
Right, you're right. And it's going to be... I know, because I've run some numbers, too. It looks like that, you know, about 83 is when I'd break even, and I think we're going to live longer than that.
Good for you.
I could use a little money, and we're taking money out of our, you know, out of our retirement accounts now.
Right.
So,
Steve, are these like IRAs that when you say taking it out?
Right now we still have some. We just sold our house and things, so we have some cash that we're drawing down. But I do have IRAs, and about three-fourths of our retirement accounts are in Roth right now, so we're in good shape there.
Okay,
I have one account that's a 403B that we'll probably draw on, you know, when we're over 70 if we need it.
Sure. Yeah, for most people, and I've told this to, well, tens of thousands of people on the radio show and hundreds of people on a one-to-one basis with clients, most people are better off tapping almost all of their liquid money first before they take their Social Security out. But the people who've been trying to broadcast that Social Security is in crisis, were shocked that message not only went out to 20- and 30-year-olds, but that 50- and 60-year-olds were actually paying attention and have come to believe the idea that Social Security is going away, and therefore they want to get as much as they can while they can. I like the idea for people who have parents who lived into their 80s, who don't have any serious health problems. I really like the idea of delaying that as long as you possibly can, because you generally get about an 8% rise, and you've done the calculations already. When you go to, I think it's SSA.gov, they have a calculator there that allows you to figure out your break-even point. The other thing I like about it, too, is trying to get your house in order financially, trying to get money out of IRAs or out of Roth IRAs or keep it into Roth IRAs so that you don't pay taxes on your Social Security benefits, because that can be a big drag. If you said, gee, we just don't know what to do, we're really kind of in a bind on this thing, get the benefits from one of you. Turn that spigot on, and then let the other ones kind of grow. And that's probably the safest way to mitigate, you know, your life expectancy issues with needing some of the money now and wanting to get everything that you have coming to you.
Thanks for the question. Let's go next to Celia in Marshfield. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for taking this call. My 16-year-old daughter was gifted $10,000, and we would like to invest it, the best way possible. She will probably be going to college in a couple of years. We don't know if we should put it into her college savings plan, or if we should keep it where she can have access to it in case she doesn't want to use it towards a college-type situation.
Sure.
So what do you suggest?
Is she working right now by any chance?
She is not.
She's not. Okay.
Probably within the next year she will be, you know, a little part-time job.
Okay, here's something just a little bit out of the ordinary I would take a look at. And that is opening up a Roth IRA for her once she has earned income on which to base the Roth IRA contribution. She has to have earned income. But she can contribute up to $5,000 or her earned income, whichever is less. So let's say she were to make, enough $5,000 in a year by working part-time or full-time during the summer, what have you, she could take that $10,000 and slide $5,000 of it each year into a Roth IRA. And as we mentioned, she could pull that contribution back out at any time for any reason, college included, But if she leaves it in there, $10,000 out of 50 years from now, that at 7% interest, I'm guessing, would be roughly $600,000 to $650,000 in retirement and tax-free. So that's where I would say the best place is to put the money. And if the money is in her name flat out, you know, like a bank account with her as the beneficiary, her Social Security number is used, it will reduce pretty substantially any financial aid she is rewarded. But when the money is in a Roth IRA, most schools will not count that as an asset to attach before they award any financial aid. And again, that doesn't mean she can't use it for college, but it may allow her to qualify for more. And, you know, here's the great thing about it, Celia, is she can actually spend her earnings.
Yeah.
And you can take that $10,000, and again, up to the contribution limits each year, and you can use that money to slide it into the Roth IRA. So you don't have to actually get her to cough up every single penny she's getting flipping burgers or what have you.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, I want to know who gave the gift and if they would adopt me. I want to ask this question before we get out of here because we've got just about full phone banks again, but I want to make sure that we talk about this. So one of the items that's uppermost on a lot of people's minds, most people who are considering retirement, is healthcare costs.
Right.
What do you think about healthcare savings accounts?
I think they're fantastic for the people who can have them. Healthcare savings accounts, for people who don't know, are generally tied into a high deductible health insurance policy. Now, the problem with healthcare savings accounts is, in many cases, on a political basis, they were sold as being something that would cure the healthcare crisis that we have in this country. And that's really not, from my perspective, that's not the case. However, for individuals, it's a good idea for them. We mentioned about raising deductibles on other insurance policies. Healthcare savings accounts, first of all, I believe it's where most organizational healthcare is going anyway. So if you work at a private company, you're going to have a healthcare savings account in a matter of years, whether you want one or not. It's a high deductible plan. And then you are allowed to contribute pre-tax money into this healthcare savings account. And once you have a charge, a healthcare cost that is not covered by the policy, you have to pay for it out of that HSA. But it comes tax-free. Now, HSA is a very unfortunate close acronym to FSA, Flexible Spending Account. And a lot of people have confused that to think that HSA deposits are the use-it-or-lose-it feature like FSAs are. They are not. Unused money rolls over from year to year into a healthcare savings account, and at any unused money when a person turns 65 converts to an IRA. So if you don't have a match in your company employer plan and you're trying to decide you have a dollar, should you put it in the 401k or should you put it in the HSA? In many cases, I would rather have people put the money into the HSA because not only will they cut their taxes, but they will also lower their health care premiums as well, and they'll still be able to use the money as a retirement account if it's not used up over their lifetime.
Time for maybe one more call, possibly two if everybody is quick. Arlene in Waukesha, you're next.
Good morning, gentlemen. My husband and I are retired. I am 65, he is 69, and we have had a comfortable amount set aside for our retirement in investments. And we're losing thousands every month at this point. I'm wondering why I shouldn't take that money out of investments and put it in a savings account at 2.75, 3%, something like that. At least I would be earning, not losing. Can you tell me why?
You sound like a woman with common sense, Arlene, because that's a commonsensical question. And the answer is you may actually be right if you can have a 20-year retirement based on the amount of current savings and current income that you have. There's a lot of people out there who are invested too aggressively, either because they've got advice that didn't fit their situation or because they just want to make as much as possible, and it feels great to invest that way when things are going well. When they're going poorly like they are, it feels terrible for everyone. And so if you've done the calculations and you say, well, this is probably how much we need to make each year over time to have enough to retire on, if 2.7% a year works, fantastic, do it. I might suggest you look at certificates of deposit, because at least then you can get 4 to 5%, and most CDs only have a 3 to 6-month penalty if you pull them out early. So in the long run, the CDs are still safe. Keep everything FDIC insured if you can. But no, I'd rather have you decide how much money you need to live on and then what type of return you need to get, and have that dictate where your money is invested.
Well, we're not using this money to live on. It's just out there to protect us.
Yeah. No, and I'd say go safer on it.
Kevin, thanks for joining us this morning. We're about out of time, but appreciate, as always, and our callers did too.
My pleasure, John.
Kevin McKinley, financial advisor, was my guest here on the program. This program was produced by Rhonda Fanning, with on-air production by Kate Madsen. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.